the Countryside Podcasts with Chris Skinner. Woodland sounds on this episode of the Countryside Podcast. And Chris Skinner is welcoming us back onto High Ash Farm once again, with the skies lightening now after a fair bit of steady rain overnight.
Yes, it's still a pound a drop at this time of the year. Believe it or not, the ground just a metre or so beneath where we're standing is absolutely parched. It's still just dry, sandy gravel. So the rains are hugely welcome. It's what we call recharging the aquifer. Some people on clay soils would scratch their head and wonder what we're talking about, because often the clay's less sort of porous, and so the water can stand on the top or run off. But here we've got a hilly farm, a whole variety of soil types, and we've suffered hugely from the prolonged drought last summer. It cut the hay production by more than 50%, and that's being felt across the central England, right across to the eastern side where we are. And it's caused some huge problems this year for lack of forage for cattle, and it's obviously affected vegetable production as well, unless you've got irrigation. So it's caused a huge amount of problems. And so having a normal winter's rainfall, which we're having so far, is really welcome. You have to think a long way ahead when you're a farmer. It's it's quite difficult, and you're often planning crops 2 years ahead to get the rotations right, but you also have to think in the short term how a crop's going to behave in any weather condition. So it's a bit of a game of dice, really. Anyway, we're just in the area of some woodland, quite close to Fox's Grove, which is just a few hundred yards away from us. And the woodland has got two spurs on it. If you look at a map, it looks like the woodland's a huge letter U with these two long belts of timber coming out. And it's very gravelly, sandy soil. Lots of trees that grew here, and some were felled in the post-war years. So just underneath where we're standing, this was a conifer belt with large Scots pine and Corsican pine on, and some of the stumps are still remaining just under soil level. And at this time of the year, it's still possible, because we started looking at all the fungi species in autumn. The fly agarics, not far from where we are, spectacular red fungi with all the white spots on the top, all the different species, and there's some interesting ones which are almost frost hardy. You can find them at any time of the year. And what I'll do later on is give our dear local photographer Laura Cuffin a call and say, could you come and photograph my candle snuff fungus?
She's never surprised by anything you ask.
She isn't. And she dons her wellies on and usually a waterproof coat, because she never quite knows what she's going to find. But I'll introduce you to one we haven't seen before. We've seen stag's horn fungus before, which is bright, almost luminous yellow. And the fungus itself looks like the antlers you might find on a large species of deer. And this one is quite similar. It's still got that antler shape, but it's called candle snuff fungus.
From a distance, it looks like some of that whitewash has gone over some grass that they use for football lines.
Yes, I suppose so. It's called candle snuff because, well, it's the opposite way round to a candle wick. A candle wick is normally white, and as it comes out of the wax, and then it goes black on the bit that's been burnt. And this fungus, I like to think it's a Norfolk fungus, because it does do different. And on the tip of the fungus, it's pure white, and that's where it spreads its spores. And then if I just move some of the nettle stems out of the way.
Like the stag's horn, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And when we look lower down on the fungus, just as it comes out, you can see there's a... the tree stump is just about visible. and it's absolutely covered in this fungus. There we are. I'll just take some of the leaf litter out of the way. And now you can see the lower part of the fungus is jet black and kind of woolly almost. Now, the white bit at the top, perfect, you can see, just where I nudged that one, it's put a little white deposit on the top of the stump, and that is these fungal spores. And Rat was just about to walk across the top of it and do a bit more spore spreading. I just grabbed him in time, because it's quite a delicate, brittle fungus, and it looks exactly like those antlers I was talking about. So there we are. And of course it's carrying out a really important job. It's one of those species that doesn't attack living wood, but it breaks down further wood that's already dead on the woodland floor. And this is the time of the year that it... If I just give that one a flick...
I saw the powder coming.
Yes, you can just see...
Those are the spores.
Oh, there it is.
That's great. Look at that.
Look at that. A whole little... That's important, because what we then saw is its reproductive method. The spores go off in the air and they look for something similar. There was probably 20,000 spores came off just then. Each one is capable of starting off a new site. And once it's in rotten wood like this, you can just see the centre of the wood is... I can actually press my finger into the wood and you can see moisture coming out all round, and that's the ideal habitat for it.
It's like a sponge there.
It is, yeah. So there we are. That's a kind of new one that we haven't visited before. Every time I move some leaves to expose the fungus a little bit more, you get a little cloud of the spores coming off.
And that needs the right conditions, doesn't it? You don't see that everywhere.
No, it is a fairly common species, but it's like other things that we look at. You have to kind of observe to maybe know what you're looking for and then to understand why the particular fungus is there. They're so choosy, fungal species, about what they grow on, where they grow and when they grow, that any time of the year you can come across them. But in this case, it's quite colourful in a strange way.
So look out for plant, what looks like a plant, but covered in like whitewash.
Yes, that's it. The tips of it is the opposite way round to the burnt candle. And as I said...
It's only an inch or so off the ground.
Yeah,
though,
it gets to about 5 centimetres at maximum. These ones here are about 3 centimetres and quite woody and wiry. But near the base, it's almost like... I don't know, felt on the bottom of it there, just as it comes out of the wood. But nevertheless, it's doing something really important, because above us we've got trees and they're harnessing the energy from the sun through photosynthesis. And what fungi can't do is they have no chlorophyll. So they have got to use other materials in order to make a living, and they do that by feasting on dead wood. Some of them infect living wood, which we've looked at before. The honey fungus is one that which thrives on attacking living trees. It's also called a bootlace fungus, Armillaria malea. This one hasn't got a common name as such, although we called it the candle snuff fungus. It's a member of a much broader genera of fungi. And they've all got quite long scientific names, but somebody saw what it does and what it looks like and named it. So it has got a common name. Most of the other members of the species don't have a common name. We've got a lovely avenue of beech trees on the other side of the wood, and occasionally I see a similar looking fungus to this, the candle snuff fungus, which we're looking at, growing out of beech mast, right in the centre of it. And it's almost identical, and that's called a beech mast fungus. Somebody again has named it, but they've all got quite long, unpronounceable scientific names, starting often with an X and then a Y followed by a Y. So you start off with Xanthoria or words like that. And this one's called a hypotoxylin species. So
sounds like something the doctor would give you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just put you on a couple of hypotoxylin.
Yes, exactly that. But nevertheless, it's easy to walk past them, not realising what they do. And they're recycling all the energy and the unusable parts of that tree stump into increasing the fertility of the woodland floor. And you remember last week we moved some of the woodland soil and it was that lovely, rich, velvety, peaty type soil. And that's all the result of all the sort of fungal species and all the different microbes which live in the soil under our feet, all breaking it down and sort of completing that lovely cycle from the trees above our heads harvesting the energy that then drops onto the woodland floor. You then have the woodland mammals eating the seeds, the fruit, the mushy fruit that comes down, brambles for instance, and then you have the predators feeding on those mammals. So you've got the deer underneath, the small mammals, long-tailed field mice, and then you have the predators coming in, things like the buzzards, the foxes, the badgers, and they eventually all die and they return to the soil. And so you have that wonderful cycle going on, and the fungal bit at the bottom of the cycle, remember these are very ancient plants, probably some of the first living things on the planet actually, breaking things down, and hugely important, very, very sort of elderly. I don't like, this sounds the wrong word because they look grey and a bit as though it's grey hair growing out of the tree stump. But I don't mean that. I mean it's kind of archaeologically important because it's really touching sort of millennia ago when a lot of the land here was all forested, a lot of it got cleared or got flooded. The bit where the North Sea now is was forested most of the way across to Europe, and when the ice caps melted, it filled it all back in again, and fungi would have been the first things to start growing again before the trees restarted.
And they're still around in January.
Yes, they are. Yes, so hugely important.
Something that I'd be unexpected to find in January, though, is a ladybird, and yet here is one, look.
Yes, I know, they're all coming out. Well, no, do better than that, Matthew.
Oh, there's several.
There's several.
Are they overwintering?
Yes, they're overwintering in the cold up leaves of the nettle here, and they're quite sort of cold tolerant. There's not been any really inclement weather and you notice the leaves are curled up and they're hibernating on the underside of the leaf. So, and it all starts to happen now. And quite often I'll find ladybirds in the hollow stems. We looked at the teasel stems last week, and that's a super place for them to hibernate in. Hollow stems, hogweed is another one where you'll find them. And so nature is really clever, and it's sitting there waiting to go, and it's stimulated by the rising sun each day, a little bit longer. And Rat says, this is quite long enough on this. And, of course, the rising temperatures as well. And he's sitting there shaking, and this is the Rat, this is. Oh, dear.
This is so, Chris's little terrier,
yes,
who always accompanies us, if you've not heard one of these before.
Yes.
Right. And he really is telling us off.
He's
now
really telling us off. And I noticed that when we drove into the woodland, when I came through earlier, there were roe deer quite close to us here, and they were grazing on the brambles here, and you can see this bramble has been eaten off, the tip's been eaten off, and they're just selectively grazing, and I can see all the brambles have been nibbled and all the fresh growth taken off, and
more fungus.
Yes, look, little parasol fungi growing where the mole has brought some soil up. And that's our next topic, because we're just moving to the end of the field where we're standing on, quite close then to Fox's, the main body of Fox's Grove woodland itself. And we're just going to look at what the moles are doing there at this time of the year.
I'm glad I didn't put my moleskin trousers on.
That would be hugely offensive to the local moles.